get it to give it to people. But the most immediate need now it's a health disaster. Now it's a very risky situation. A whole population is subjected to a very big alarming risk. That's why it is very urgent to immediately exercise pressure so that Palestinians also get the vaccines.
Would you describe this as medical apartheid?
Yes, absolutely. This is the worst form of apartheid, medical apartheid. It didn't even exist in South Africa. This is just beyond description. Imagine you go to a prison, you vaccinate the guards, but not the prisoners. You vaccinate Israeli prisoners who are criminal usually, and not vaccinate Palestinian political prisoners. Imagine you go in the cities of the West Bank, the settlers are vaccinated, and nearby Palestinian cities and communities are not vaccinated. Not only they grab our land, not only they settle illegally on our land, take away our natural resources, take away our sources of economy, but also they practice this system of apartheid. I call it vaccination with racism.
Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, physician, member of the Palestinian Parliament, thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. The time is 7:59 a.m. Next up is Too Much Information.
Information on KBOO 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and points beyond. My name is Abe Proctor. Happy 2021. I am joined by my illustrious co-host, Tracy Simmons. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning. New year is moving in the interesting direction. Happy New Year. I would say happy is a question. Happy with the question mark.
Do tell. Why is your happiness in question?
Well, you know, I came into the new year, you know, talking about setting intentions, and I'm doing that. But I am so overwhelmed at this point. My hope was that I would be able to set intentions without Trump in, you know, kind of the forefront of my mind. And I'm not able to do that just yet because he just keeps doing these crazy things and stirring up craziness everywhere he goes. And so, you know, today is, of course, the Georgia runoff. I'm excited to see what happens. Part of me is excited. Part of me is that overwhelm, worry, fear, anxiety. Mm-hmm. Who knows? You know, we are witnessing, you know, months later, Trump trying to steal an election that happened in November. So, you know, who knows? We saw last night him have a huge super spreader maskless rant of a rally, and you know, we know that he pressured the Secretary of State of Georgia to find 11,000 plus ballots for him. I mean, we're just in this crazy period, and you know, we've talked about what you know was to come. But I was just really hoping that I would get to this point. We know that the certification process for the Senate and Congress happens on Wednesday, and it's more and more crazy. And so, yeah, I'm really trying to be centered in my approach to the new year. But I have the most mediocre expectations for 2021 as it's going so far.
I don't know what you're worked up about. It was a perfect phone call. It was perfect, just like the phone call with the Prime Minister of Ukraine a couple of years ago. I mean, he's just asking them to find more votes, right, that are lying around after the votes were counted and then recounted and then certified. Certainly there's another 12,000 votes lying around, right? That's only rational.
Lying around, I mean, the things that he claimed in that call were just bizarre. I mean, he claimed that dead people voted and gave a number, 5,000, you know, 5,000 dead people voted. Right now, we have over 350,000 dead people in America of a preventable illness. And you're focused on the 5,000 fake dead people in Georgia that did not vote. Like, what are you talking about? No evidence of any of the things they claimed. He claimed that there were thousands and thousands of ballots in a box that was not an official or sealed box, made up, just pulled out of nowhere. He talked about there were some out-of-state voters that voted in Georgia. And, of course, there was another number of 4,925. So he's just pulling out these random numbers that, you know, somehow just totaled to around 11,000 that he's putting pressure in that kind of mafioso style, you know, hey, your lawyer's going to be involved in this. And I can't. I really want to just have him in my complete rear view. For whatever reason, he's like a bad rock, so it won't go away.
Like athlete's foot or something. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think he's going to be completely in our rearview mirrors for some time. I mean, what was really striking to me about that phone call was not necessarily the criminal behavior, right? That's standard Trump procedure. We're used to that. What really struck home to me is that he still believes or still hopes on some level that he can remain president and he can make enough threats and he could, you know, push his grip far enough to maintain his grip on the office. He still believes that. That's what really comes home to me. So this is more about, you know, just losing the power of the presidency and the prestige of the office. This is about something more existential. He is scared of what awaits him when he leaves office. I think that's the only conclusion we can come to here.
Well, yeah, and I do. I have to wonder, what is it? We know that there's this stinky money out there, but what else is out there? What kind of criminal exposure does he have that he knows will be exposed in some time? And, you know, what is also interesting is that there's a whole bunch of people in the Republican Party who are planning to object to the election results. Okay, this is not useful. It's not going to do anything. It's absolutely symbolic, symbolizing pretty much nothing. But we have, you know, the Ted Cruz's of the world and, you know, Josh Hawley's of the world who are really putting their party in such a bind. And just if anyone was able to tune into Trump's rally last night and just could even, you know, string together any sense out of what he was saying, he did no benefit to Kelly Loeffler or Mr. Perdue in Georgia. And so you're like, okay, so what are you doing? What is the purpose here? I understand that, you know, Trump has the criminal exposure and financial exposure. But what is the benefit to people who seem to be able to, if they would, detach themselves from Trump and Trumpism because they still have the power. I really worry about these people more so than Trump, because he will eventually go away. We'll be left with these folks.
I think I know the answer. I think I know why they're doing this. I think it's a big hedging of their bets. They're banking on one of two things. The first being that they can somehow make this audacious ploy work, and that somehow the results of the election will not stand, that they will be able to pull some procedural ploy, keep it from happening, and then backed up by the hordes of Proud Boys and other right-wingers that are going to descend on Washington, D.C. tomorrow, that they'll somehow be able to keep Trump in office. That's option A. Option B is Trump loses his office, things go ahead as they're supposed to, but because they have mounted this defense in of their dear leader, they will then be the natural inheritors of the dear leader's base of support. That's what I think is going on.
Yeah.
But in any event, it is a circus. It is embarrassing. It is shameful. And again, we keep coming back to this. We can't let ourselves be distracted by the sheer incompetence and, you know, bumbling of this effort. We can't get so distracted by that we don't recognize it for what it is, which is a concerted effort, even now, months after the election, as you mentioned, Tracy, to overturn the lawful electoral results of a United States general election. That is something we've never had to deal with before. That is a coup attempt. That is sedition at worst or best, and treason at worst. So let's not lose sight of that fact. This is incredibly serious, despite the idiocy of some people involved. Next time around, they're not going to be idiots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, and all this comes on, you know, the face of the pandemic. We know that there were four attempts to get through an increase in the stimulus package to $2,000 for individuals. And of course, you know, Mitch McConnell stood in the face of Americans who just, you know, spit in it and said, no, not going to happen. You know, let's apply this to eight other different stupid things. So what we see is all of this shenanigans going on while people are literally dying. Yesterday, I believe there was over 2,000 people in the United States who died. We know that the pandemic is spiking in the UK because of a mutation of the virus. That seems even more infectious, which is hard to believe, but even more infectious. And we know that it will eventually come here because we've done nothing to shut down the systems and the, you know, transference of the virus. And so just to think that all of this could be going on while so many Americans are hurting, it is really overwhelming for me. I am an empath, and I feel I have some friends who have been impacted. One of my friends, you know, devastatingly impacted, has survived this deadly disease, but is learning how to walk and talk again. And so, you know, from a perspective of just being a human in the world, to imagine that your country could be hurting so badly, and your focus is on appeasing and you know, kind of bowing down to your leader who is the loser of the election. It just is, it's mind-boggling. It boggles the mind.
You know, that's a really good way to put it. Now, I want to draw our listeners' attention to sort of a parallel effort that's going on. I mentioned it just a few minutes ago. And that is the large number of right-wing agitators that are planning to descend upon the nation's capital tomorrow. It's the usual suspects, Proud Boys and Patriot Prayer, the Boogaloo Boys, everyone that you would expect. They're scheduled to stage a mass demonstration in Washington. Now, just exactly how massive that will be, we really don't know. At least in this town, when they have, in recent months, threatened to show up in numbers, their numbers have not been very impressive. But we should, again, not lose sight of the fact we should not let the ineptitude of these people blind us to what they're doing. They're going to be demonstrating in mass in the nation's capital in support of the president's effort to overturn the results of a lawful election. Many of them will be armed. Many of them have stated their intent to try to gain entry into one or more houses of government. I could only assume that means the Capitol. and they're being supported by people within the Congress. For example, Republican Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas, a noted intellectual paragon, and the author of the ridiculous lawsuit he brought forward last week to sue the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence, to sue him to say he could not enact his constitutionally appointed duty of presiding over the official count of the Electoral College results. That lawsuit was tossed out. In response, Gohmert suggested that those who live in the alternate reality of Trump world should, quote, go to the streets and be violent, end quote. Not the greatest of suggestions in conjunction with a planned armed rally of right-wing agitators. It's entirely possible, and I don't want to sound alarmist here. Well, maybe I do want to sound alarmist here. It's entirely possible the last couple of weeks of Trump's presidency are going to be marked by civilian violence. I think we should be prepared for that. And again, go ahead.
It's that Enrique Terrio is the de facto leader of the Proud Boys, and I believe he is being held right now because
yes.
In the last go-round of showing up in Washington, D.C., he was found to be the person who had burned the Black Lives Matter flag in front of the Black church. And so I'm guessing he won't be there. So, you know, even more incompetent for the rest of them to show up without their leader. But it's very interesting to imagine that a person named Enrique is the leader of a white supremacist organization. The irony, oil boy.
Yeah, indeed. You know, but he has been arrested for leading and orchestrating the vandalism and destruction at a black church in D.C., as he should be arrested for doing such a thing. So I was glad to see that. I don't think it'll have the effect of defusing what's going to happen tomorrow in Washington. And I'm sure you and I and all the people who are concerned about this sort of thing will be watching that situation very closely. I should mention right now that the number to call to take part in this conversation is 503-231-8187. I'm interested to hear your opinions on a range of subjects this morning about the recount or the runoff elections in Georgia, about the account of the Electoral College tomorrow in D.C., about what to do with the now ever-present phenomenon of armed white-wing agitators on the streets of not just our nation's capital but of our fair city here in Oregon. So, lots to talk about. Let's go to Robbie. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. So I'm watching this. I got to say, you know, the stuff that you're talking about, the potential for violence. I think what's happening is, I don't know if you've ever read Robert Anton Wilson.
He's
an author.
Yeah.
So he describes what I consider what we are living in as a programmer's war. And the programmer's war is basically how the people who own the media, the people who own, you know, politicians, the people who own these corporations, they have to program the masses in order to get what it is that they want done. And I have been like, that's what the Trump's presidency is. That's why he's doing this. And so, and just, you know, in my crazy world, right, I think you might have an idea about what it is, but like Donald Trump was a Democrat up until the year 2010. He was endorsing Hillary Clinton to run in the year 2016 after she lost in 2012 or in 2008. And like the thing of this is like when you're looking at it through this lens, everything makes sense. The way that he's riling up this crowd, the way that and here's to be honest, all the elections are rigged. Every election is rigged. And I'm not going to say, obviously, Joe Biden won, but look at what's happening in Georgia, right? And it's the idea about the election being rigged. Is it voter suppression or is it voter fraud? Those are two, you know, and it doesn't matter because what that has caused is everybody questioning the integrity of our election system. But our elections were never, there's no integrity in our elections. Going back to 2000, that's what radicalized me when I saw that George Bush won. And clearly not the, you know, obviously they had to do Florida and the Supreme Court, but like that election, nobody cared. We, you know, we just accept it. Bernie Sanders, the Democrats have rigged. There's clear evidence. The only people who don't believe in the evidence are the people who are listening to the media, which is why I give so much slack to my black and brown brothers who are, you know, Trump supporters. Because they, when I talk to them, they're not full-blown Trump supporters, but they don't trust the news. And I can't blame them, you know? I really can't, because right now there is scary stuff going on. We have the media programmers literally programming what you were suggesting, which is the violence, because they want that. And then half the people want to go right back to a Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, Obama, which a lot of people aren't okay with. But right now, Donald Trump has literally shifted us so far right that we're going to be okay with that. And
I think I need some context from you, Robbie. I apologize for interrupting you, but a few minutes ago you said, when viewed through this lens, everything sort of makes sense. Can you explain what that lens is and why everything makes sense through it?
Because Bill Clinton called up Donald Trump in April of 2015 and suggested he play a larger part in the Republican effort to get elected. Bill Clinton literally called him up, and a lot of people are saying, like, oh, okay, well, that's because Clinton wanted this, you know, and Donald Trump thought that, you know, they thought it's amazing to me watching certain facts get blown over by people both on the left and right, because it's confusing. I hear people say that all the time. It's people are like, how can this happen? And when you live in my crazy world of hyper, you know, realization of like all these ridiculous things, like the fact that Donald Trump was for abortion, he was for universal health care, and he was a Democrat until their Utah 2010. How does somebody do a complete 360? He endorsed Hillary Clinton to run in the year 2011. And it's like, how does somebody flip like that?
Donald Trump is a creature of pure id. He has no problem shifting his priorities or his ideology to suit the moment. I'm just having trouble drawing a through line from an alleged conversation with Bill Clinton years ago to what's happening today. I don't think it was years ago.
Here's the thing: it was in 2015, and it was a month before Donald Trump announced running for the Republican candidacy. But let me explain it, because the thing is it's what Donald Trump is a television movie actor. He gets into office, he plays the role of the bigot, racist, riling up the base. Everybody assumes, and he is. Everybody, you know, can agree. You just said it to me. He's self-centered, you know, egocentric, only concerned for himself. But do you think that they would allow a president, a person nominated for president, do you think the CIA and the FBI would allow that to happen if they didn't have some form of control over that? Look at Bernie Sanders. Look at how hard they suppressed Bernie Sanders. There was literally Bernie Sanders rallies, hundreds of thousands, maybe not hundreds, tens of thousands of people at a rally. And what CNN and Fox News and MSNBC, they had a blank Trump stage, because Trump sold, and they would not have Bernie Sanders. This is the programmer's war. And right now we are being programmed. There is no difference between the left and right. Everybody's riled up about it. Sure, there's obvious racism that America's always had. But when you look at
well, there's what we are one difference between.
There's obvious differences between the left and right. But when you look at the war machine, when you look at what's happening underneath it, there's really not much change. All there's happening is the executive branch has been grabbing more and more power. I don't know if you've ever watched the movie Vice I forget his name. He played Dick Cheney. Anyway, when you watch the movie Vice, it really elaborately, it sets up what is happening right now. And there's been an executive power grab, which we are witnessing. But basically, this has been set up years. It's been set up in decades ago. And what's happening makes sense.
The executive has accumulated more power unto itself for a long time now. That's not something that began with Donald Trump, not by a long shot. But listen, I think we're going to leave it there and give some others a chance.
Here's the thing. Donald Trump is now using this power grab for exactly what we are witnessing. This was planned decades ago. They needed somebody like Donald Trump to get everybody to be like, this guy's so full of himself, he's all this. But do you really think that the CIA and the FBI would let an election like that? That's what I'm saying. They rigged the Gore versus Bush election. There is no democracy. Yeah, we might be able to get a senator in office, but then look at what AOC, you know, look what's happening with AOC.
Okay. Regardless of the outcome that these shadowy puppet masters are going for, with the ones that you're speculating about here, I don't think they came up with Donald Trump. I don't think they came up with anything like the guy. I think he's an aberration, and he has effectively hijacked whatever agenda may or may not have been there entirely for his own ends.
No, there is literally a Washington here.
Hey, listen, thanks for the call, Robbie. I appreciate it. And in addition to harnessing this thing for his own ends, he has absolutely capitalized upon the groundswell of racism that has always been there amongst the American electorate. So if there are shadowy puppet masters out there who have been for years grooming the field to prepare us for somebody like Donald Trump, I don't think they had someone quite like Donald Trump in mind. Anything you want to add to that, Tracy?
I would just absolutely agree. And, you know, I like, you know, Robbie, and Robbie comes with interesting ideas that I don't necessarily disagree with, but I do feel like there was a little bit of nihilism there, like a burn it all down, it doesn't work at all. And that is not where I go to, because that is not a place where we can be. I mean, without a bloody civil war, we're not going to burn it all down and be saved ourselves. And so it really is about moving from a sense of cynicism and, you know, nihilism to a place of like, no, this exception is not bad on the face of it. Of course, the racism, the white supremacy, the, you know, minority rule that's baked into the system doesn't work. And we, as the electorate, need to continue pushing upon that. I don't know about this grand scheme and design. I do know that whenever there has been any question about an election, Republicans have been at the helm of whatever that was, whether that's Bush 4, whether that's right now. We know that they are trying to maintain minority rule, and I absolutely don't believe that the two parties are the exact same thing. I think there is definitely a problem with the war machine, with the prison industrial complex that are supported by both parties. And all of that is related to keeping money in the system, because we need to get money out of politics.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think I feel pretty similarly. There's a lot of what Robbie says to us on a regular basis that resonates with me. It's very easy to look at the two major parties and become frustrated, because both of them seem at base to be more concerned with preserving the prerogatives of their donor class than they are taking action on any number of the incredibly pressing issues that are important to left-leaning people like us and a lot of people who listen to this show. It's very easy to be frustrated by that. It's very easy, I think, to be lulled into thinking there's no difference at all. There is a difference. I think it doesn't take a whole lot of thought. You don't have to scratch very deep beneath the surface before those differences become pretty stark. Now, Robbie is correct in that the status quo is not useful to us as progressives. Things as they are got us to where we are. That's not a useful state of affairs. But you're absolutely right, Tracy, that if we give in to that temptation to throw our hands up and say, oh, there's no difference, there's no use in participating, all the elections are rigged, it's all just a big nihilist mess, that way lies madness. We can't afford to let ourselves go there. This is why I continue to bang on the fact that we as progressives have to work within existing institutions that are at our disposal. That's the only way we're going to be able to affect a meaningful change. It's probably not going to happen that way nearly as fast as we would like. But again, the alternative is madness. We can't just withdraw. We can't just throw up our hands. We can't just step away entirely, because when you start down that road, either there's complete societal collapse and we cede the field entirely to the Proud Boys and their ilk, or we degenerate into civil war, into violent civil war. Neither of those outcomes are acceptable to me, nor should they be to any progressives out there. We have to keep working, and we have to keep working within our democratic institutions, as flawed as they are, as maddening and as frustrating as they are, because the alternatives are just too horrible to contemplate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you. It's like, yeah, the idea that we're just gonna somehow emerge unscathed if there was some kind of bloody conflict to kind of take back our country. I just don't see that going well. And especially when we think about gun power and who has guns and who would use those guns, we know. You know, there are people who are literally stockpiling, you know, full arsenals for themselves, whether they're individuals or, you know, a few people. But we would be outgunned, and you know, there's just no way to get around the fact that millions more people would be harmed by such a thing. So it's not an option for me. It's, you know, as a black person in America, I'm not calling for that. I don't think it's a good idea. And I think, you know, it would be people of color and poor people who would be harmed most in that kind of scenario.
Yes, and I'm also wondering, when I hear people suggest that the whole thing is busted and we should just throw up our hands and walk away, do these people imagine that they will emerge unharmed, that they can just simply be bystanders as the world burns? No. I mean, if we go in either of those directions I suggested, either ceding the field to the racists or degenerating into, you know, hot civil war, both of those outcomes are going to draw everybody in. Everybody is going to suffer under both of those outcomes. Right. Here with your happy Tuesday morning message, this is Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We're talking about a whole range of things, as it appears. The official count of the Electoral College taking place tomorrow in Washington, D.C., simultaneously with a mass gathering of right-winged agitators. Also, the Georgia runoff election taking place today. And also, a pretty mixed bag in terms of how soon we will be able to emerge from the pandemic, given the fact that the vaccine rollout, even in its early stages, is being pretty badly mismanaged by the Trump administration. Did I cover all our happy bases, Tracy?
I think we did. I mean, I have some okay news. You know, so Nate Silver at 538 put out the most recent polling in Georgia, and as of yesterday, Ossoff is leading by 1.8 percentage points, and Warnock is leading by 2.1 percentage points. But I absolutely want people to keep their eye on this all day. And hopefully, if you would like to see anything that sounds or sniffs of anything progressive happen, we need control of the Senate, and we need to send Mitch McConnell a clear message that we don't want him anymore. And so I think it's just going to be really important to keep watching what's happening. These have shifted pretty significantly. So on November 9th, Perdue was leading by about 4 points, and Kelly Loeffler was leading by about 1 percentage point. And it's flipped pretty significantly since then. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. My fingers are crossed. And once again, right, if we want to see anything happen that looks like a Medicare for all in the midst of a pandemic, or even a new stimulus package that really helps actual people and individuals, we will need support from the Senate to get these things moving. So, not trying to put all my eggs in that basket, but I think it's, I'm hopeful. I just remain hopeful, though.
I have to confess that I've lost a great deal of faith in current cutting edge poll methodology. We've had three electoral cycles now where they have come up wrong. So, until we figure out how better to model the intent of the electorate, I'm disinclined to be encouraged by polls. But, you know, I'll take whatever bone you're willing to throw, Tracy, this morning. Interesting you mentioned Kelly Loeffler. Kelly Loeffler is the most wealthy member of the United States Senate. Her husband literally owns the New York Stock Exchange. And when I say literally owns, I mean literally owns the New York Stock Exchange. Ms. Loeffler herself is the owner of the WNBA franchise, the Atlanta Dream, the players for which, the entire squad, posed yesterday wearing t-shirts that said vote for Warnock. You know, these things are meaningless, but I think they're very, very funny. So, for what it's worth, the Atlanta WNBA franchise is firmly behind Ms. Loeffler's opponent, Raphael Warnock. Let's go to Marilyn. Good morning.
Hi, how are you guys? Yeah, I just wanted to say something about the fake progressives that I occasionally talk to on Facebook, and they always want to go after the Democratic Party no matter what the GOP did, and the Democratic Party is just as bad as they are, and yada, yada, yada. And it's just a bunch of lies. It's not true. The Democratic Party is all that stands between us and fascism. And we should value that fact and revere it and support it. And the Democrats are doing what they must do to protect us from a bunch of rich, insane, crazy billionaires that are grabbing our power. And hail to the Democrats and bless the Democrats. And Bill Clinton is not even on the playing field. He doesn't matter. He's a nothing. And so it's the bunch of greedy corporate Democrats that corrupted our party for a while. But we're back, folks, and we're going to win this, and we're going to change everything. Hooray.
Hooray. Well, I certainly hope you're right, Marilyn. Thank you for the call. Anything you want to add to that, Tracy?
Yeah, I mean, I hear Marilyn and what she's saying. And, of course, you know, who has been vilified? Of course, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, who won, once again, a speakership. And she will be the next Speaker of the House. And I know that there were some people who didn't support her. And that's interesting. But what is the most fantastic thing to realize is that the only way anything has moved forward in the past 4 years under Trump has been the resolve and resilience of Nancy Pelosi. I am not a person that thinks any one person is perfect. There is no perfect person in the world. We are all perfectly imperfect. But I agree with Marilyn that whenever things come up, we tend to focus and eat our own, as opposed to focus on what's happening on the other side. And, you know, I consider myself to be a progressive, not necessarily a Democrat. But because of the way this two-party system is working, I'm regularly voting with Democrats because I don't have very many other choices. And I think from the standpoint of being a true progressive, there are things that we should be doing to really force and struggle away from this two-party system. And I've talked about ranked choice voting and other mechanisms that have worked in other places to infuse new ideas, innovative leadership, and potential for a different kind of party system to be set up. But yeah, I absolutely agree. There were five House Democrats that didn't support Nancy Pelosi for Speaker. And, you know, I would be interested to hear what their plan was or who else they thought could even do this job in the face of what has occurred in the last 4 years.
Yeah. I don't share that rosy assessment of Nancy Pelosi. I think she's good at wrangling votes when she has needed to. She was instrumental in the passage of the Affordable Care Act under the Obama administration. But she most definitely supports the prerogatives of the wealthy donors who keep putting her into office. And I think she badly misread the politics of impeachment, particularly at the end of the Mueller investigation. But all of these things, I think, could be a topic for an entire show. What I want to focus on, though, is, yes, I consider myself much more progressive than I do a Democrat. In fact, I haven't been a Democrat. The only time I've been a Democrat in the past 20 years was briefly in 2016, so I could vote for Bernie in the primary. That's the only time I've been an officially registered Democrat in all of that time. But, you know, the Democratic Party is an imperfect vessel for the prerogatives of progressives. Nevertheless, and I keep coming back to this, they are the only vessel we have right now to work with. And I don't think that that necessarily forecloses the possibility of good progressive outcomes. And in defense of that argument, I would offer up someone like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, an incredibly bright, energetic leader of the progressive cause. She is a member of the Democratic Party. And I would go so far as to suggest that had she not run for office as a Democrat, she would not have been elected. Without that affiliation, without that pool of progressively inclined voters, she would not have ascended to take a spot in the United States House of Representatives. That means that she, like I think what you and I are trying to encourage our listeners to do, Tracy, is seeing the Democratic Party as you know, an imperfect vessel, to be sure, but a means through which progressives can work to enact their will. So I would say to people out there who have a knee-jerk distrust of the Democrats, and I would have to include myself among them. You know, don't shy away there. I mean, the Democrats can be responsive to pressure. We've seen this. The Democrats can actually change their ideology to the extent that they're able to elect people like AOC and like Ayanna Pressley and Ilhan Omar and all the other members of the squad, this upcoming generation of young progressives that are rising up through the ranks. I think these people are going to help to align the Democratic Party to be an even better vessel for progressive ends. So don't write them off, progressives. Don't throw up your hands and sit on the sidelines. Get in there, get your hands dirty. If you don't like the Democratic Party as it is, that's fine. If you don't want to be a Democrat, that's fine. But you can still exert your influence, and you can still push on elected Democrats to move the levers of power in the directions we need them to move. That's what I'm saying. Let's go to Aaron. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Very well. How are you?
Good, thanks. So 2 weeks ago when Ravi called, I just wanted to bring up that he had mentioned revolution and tearing down the system, and both the hosts of the show had quickly changed the language to both war, civil war, and violence. So I just wanted to bring up the point that I believe revolution can be peaceful and come at with love, and the system can also be torn down without violence. I believe that, of course, I'm realistic and believe that the opportunity for violence completely exists, but the analogy I wanted to make is that I work in carpentry and construction, and a house or a barn can be torn down and deconstructed using violence, but if you want to reuse it, you can also take it down with love and craft and care, nail by nail, to be reused. So what I'm saying is, if we want to tear down the system, it doesn't have to be conflated to war, civil war, and violence. I think we need to use less harsh language and think more about peace and love, and I do believe it'll take more work than I'm even aware of, and I think people will suffer, but I'd rather it be approached with the language of love and healing than war and violence and civil war. And that's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Don't have a lot to argue with there. That's really nice call. I really like the analogy of lovingly deconstructing something so that you can rebuild it again from its component parts. That's nice.
Yes. And I have no hope that that would ever happen. I'm just going to say, people who built the system want to maintain the system as it is, and there is no way that they're giving up the power and the structure of the system that continues to confer power to them without a fight. So that's why I go there. We know that happened in, you know, 1860, and if it were to come up again, that the system is, you know, really trying to be transformed. It would take people on the inside of the system to want to transform it, and we know that the Republican Party as a whole has no desire to transform the system. They benefit from the status quo, they perpetuate the status quo, and they continue to use their power in ways which really indefinitely establishes the status quo. And so, yeah, I love the sentiment. I'm absolutely a person who believes in being positive about things. But I think in this situation, I lean further into realism and being realistic about what would actually happen if there was a huge disruption to the system from the inside or otherwise, to really have to deconstruct it and reconstruct it.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. You know, as we were talking about a few weeks ago, that there is no criticism of racism that a racist will find acceptable. Just as there is no challenge to power that someone in power will find acceptable. So yeah, I would agree with you entirely. I try to go through my life, you know, spreading peace and love as far as I can go, but I don't have a lot of illusions when it comes to actually, actually disrupting the prerogatives of those holding power. That takes, if not violence, the implied threat of something approaching it. I realize I'm on a very, very slippery slope here. That's one of the reasons that bodies in the streets is such an effective means of affecting political change. Look what happened this summer when thousands of Americans spilled into the streets to suggest at long last that the systematic murder of people of color ought to come to an end. Was that well received by the racist power structure? It was absolutely not. We saw those people met with force again and again and again. So without people actually willing to put their bodies on the line, it's hard to imagine power yielding anything to anyone. Let's go to Ellen. Good morning.
Good morning. Let me take you off speaker. I can get that drawing. Darn it. Okay, hi, thanks. I'm thinking that if Biden doesn't already know it already, they will let him know very fast that if he does anything that really threatens the military-industrial complex or the major corporations, he'll be assassinated like the Kennedys. And unfortunately, there are more, you know, the corporations are so much more rich and powerful now than they were 55 years ago.
That's true.
And I think I absolutely agree that the only counter to that is masses of us. You know, the same as way in the Roosevelt managed to convince the wealthy people that there was going to be a revolution if they didn't give something to the people, because we're so much poorer. You know, the middle class is getting decimated, and you know, we're hurting, and that, you know, jobs have gone downhill with, you know, they say, oh, it's for the shareholders, they're widows and orphans, you know, so you have to produce so much more per hour, and you have to work through your lunch to meet your quotas, and you have to accept rotten pay and no benefits because there's all these other people who need the job. I mean, you know, blah, blah. But I think that, you know, Biden can't really do what we want on his own, what we need, what we would like, that the wealthy are so scared, they're so ruthless. They will just literally assassinate him. What do you think?
I agree. There was a point during the early stages of the New Deal when Roosevelt was first pulling those pieces together, when he said to an assembled group of labor and political leaders, okay, now you have to make me do this. You know, meaning that he essentially was being asked to be a class traitor, and he was reviled by the upper classes, Roosevelt was, for what he did. He was being asked to challenge the prerogatives of the wealthy and powerful, and he said to his supporters in labor that you have to make me do this. So that's where we come in. That's where listeners of this program and the other public affairs programs on cable come in. We can do everything we can to force Joe Biden to do the right thing. That includes everything up to direct action. Yeah,
that gives him backing. Without that, he has no backing. No.
Yeah.
He can't, you know, that's all. Alrighty.
Okay, well,
thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. Tracy, what do you think?
Well, I'm right there. I feel like, you know, Joe Biden is a wonderful president. He said that. We know we'll have a fight in 2024. We know that he's going to be blocked at every step if we don't get Mitch McConnell out of the way. We know that the Democratic majority in the House has shrunk, and so we have that fight coming up in 2022 and 2024 to maintain those majorities. We know it's an uphill battle. And once again, right, we have to go back to the structure. The structure is what makes it so. And so what is happening right now is Republicans are fighting tooth and nail on the part of their corporate sponsors to maintain the power. And that's why they're pretty much throwing all caution to the wind and, you know, trying to decertify elections and showing up tomorrow and potentially saying that they, you know, are going to object to a duly elected president. But it's not going to matter so much, but we know that this is just the tip of the iceberg. And we can look forward to, unfortunately, the next probably 10 years of these kinds of really it's a backlash to the Browning of America, a backlash to, you know, wanting a more equitable and inclusive society. And what happens in an equitable and inclusive society is that there can't be a minority rule. And so what we're seeing is really an awakening for Republicans and I would say, you know, even libertarians who are, you know, highly backed by the Kochs and some of these other large corporate entities that continue to wield a large amount of power and have lots of resources behind them to maintain the stronghold on America that they have, and while the rest of us kind of fight for the scraps. And so what we've seen also in Portland is a microcosm of what I'm talking about when we talk about, you know, people demonstrating, people getting out there, people calling for a revolution. You know, there was a New Year's Eve demonstration. There were some windows broken. And, of course, we get, you know, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler telling about he wants tougher penalties for people who are repeatedly caught engaging in vandalism, right, breaking windows. Like, really, windows can be replaced. Why don't you check in with those people and figure out why they continue to demonstrate in this way? It's because instead of defunding the police, you want to create more problems and tougher penalties for people, as opposed to really seeing what's not working in our cities. And it's just a microcosm of what would happen if there was mass demonstrations. We saw lots of violence happen, and the violence was not on part of most of the demonstrators over the summer, right? It was really the police trying to control people, and controlling people with rubber bullets and gas and, you know, all other implements that they had, batons. And so I just feel like we're at this fever pitch in our nation where the actual people who make up the nation need to wake up. We need to stop voting in people who don't have our best interests at heart. We need to get rid of people like Mitch McConnell who have, you know, really kind of positioned themselves as barriers to progressive change. Like, I don't know why they continue to be elected. And, you know, I know Robbie has a point when he says that, you know, some of the elections are rigged. I still have questions about how, with Mitch McConnell's 17%, you know, approval rating, he got reelected. It doesn't make sense. And so there's things that we should be looking at to determine what's happening there. But I really feel people need to rise up and use their vote and their voices in a way that helps us all kind of get clear-eyed about where do we want to be as a country in 10, 15, 20 years.
I want to pull on a thread that you mentioned just a few moments ago, and that you said that a lot of what we're seeing from the conservative wing of the electorate right now is a backlash to the Browning of America. So I'm wondering, do you think is that the through line that we're seeing behind all of this right-wing behavior recently, this existential fear of the day when white people no longer constitute a numerical majority?
I think that there's a there. I won't say it's a through line necessarily, but there's a
there. There's a there. Yeah.
There's a there. I feel like, you know, in conversations with folks about, you know, what will America look like, America has always been a minority, a majority white nation, and kind of a growing majority of people of color. And, you know, maybe 10 years ago, there was articles that came out saying, oh, well, you know, by 2040, white people will be the minority. And what's interesting is that's when we started to see kind of a ramping up of this power hoarding, control, Citizens United, the ways in which, you know, the rules began to start changing to, you know, continue to hold on to power. And I do believe that there is something about the original sin of harming Native indigenous peoples, enslaving Africans, that for some people, there's this conception that, oh my gosh, if they get power, they're going to do it to us.
Yeah, right? That's just it. If you're a white person and you're worried about being in the minority, you must understand at some very basic level that minorities have been treated very, very poorly in this country. And, you know, and if your reaction to that is fear, rather than, you know, an attempt to craft a society that's equitable to everyone, then, you know, I never really know what to say to you. You're in for some difficult times, I think.
What's interesting is, though, you know, and I'll speak for myself, but I don't know of anyone in, you know, my culture, my community, who wants to get even. We just want to live.
Right.
We want to be able to exist, be civically engaged, you know, be self-actualized. I mean, it's very strange.
Be a full human being. Black Lives Matter is not about revenge. It's about justice and it's about equity. And if that bothers you as a white person, you have some serious introspection ahead of you. Good luck, I say to you, if you're one of those white people. Let's go to Thomas. Thomas, good morning.
Yeah, hi. You know, you brought up OCA, Ocasio-Cortez, and I think, you know, those people, the people are that, you know, the real more or less progressives in the House, they're people you can kind of work with. The Progressive Caucus is they're just about out in left field someplace. You know, they're not doing anything really progressive. And however, you know, these progressives, the squad, that little core, these are also people that you're going to have to fight with. And if you think that they're on your side, that's a mistake, because they're all getting pulled into the Washington culture, and they're being changed as time goes on. They just had a chance. I don't know if you're familiar with this force the vote, hashtag force the vote thing that's been going on, that Jimmy Dore, you know, he's a YouTube podcaster, that he started this. And he supported it, at least by Cornel West. Cornel West thought he had a good idea. The idea was to withhold votes from Nancy Pelosi. As I calculated, four of those so-called progressives could have withheld their votes, and she would not have gotten in. I know I heard the praises of Nancy Pelosi today on KBOO. You know, and that's fine. But they could have withheld their votes unless she put Medicare for All, the prime issue, OCA, all these quotes. Dore showed all of her quotes on video of her saying how important this was and how you have to force people to do things, and you can do more in 1 year rather than in 10 years if you're not afraid, and that we need Medicare for All and that we need a House vote. She said all of those things, but when it came right down to it, she was a primary spokesperson lately. This is all on record of her working against this effort, so that if a few of them withheld their votes, since there is such a small margin, that Nancy Pelosi would not have gotten her speakership. And the payback would be to put Medicare for All on the docket for a floor vote, and it was a strategic thing. Now, they're not going to necessarily pass it or anything like that, and I'm not going to get into all the reasoning because I can't remember it, but there was a big debate going on about this. So here's a case where, even though 70, 80, 90% of the people in the country want Medicare for All, those so-called progressives would not come together. I think four of them could have done it. That's all it took out of about 15 of these people. And they could have withheld the vote. And it would not have gone necessarily, this whole thing. Oh, they came back with, OCA was the spokesperson. All these reasons about why they can't do it, you know. And that's what the Democrats do. They're always looking for reasons why they can't do things. Because in my opinion, and other people's opinion, all they really care about is keeping their positions. You know, and that's it. They don't care, really. You know, and that's just my cynical opinion, of course. But they could have done something. Have you guys heard of this force the vote? You know, I heard nothing on KBOO about it. I heard nothing on Democracy Now.
I have.
Hey, thank you for the call, Thomas. Tracy, you have heard of this?
I have, and so there was a demonstration, and it was smaller than the crummy little Proud Boys demonstration. I think it was probably like 20 people demonstrating in D.C. around force the vote. And what was interesting about that is that the Medicare for All is not law. There's not even a written proposal of what that would look like besides what Bernie had in his kind of, you know, platform. So there's not a law that's been written. You can't force a vote on something that hasn't even been crafted. And we know as long as Ms. McConnell is there, it's all performative. It really is very performative.
Yeah.
And so I think what happened is AOC, from a strategic perspective, said, okay, I forced a vote. I don't vote on this. Nothing happens, and we don't have a speakership. What happens then? And so I think she just had a different perception of how to move forward than other progressives, and basically they skewered her over it. So Jimmy Dore, Breonna Joy Gray, some of the kind of Bernie stands that are out there in the world, Nina Turner, kind of dumped down AOC's throat over it. But, you know, you can't force a vote on legislation that has not been crafted. And it doesn't matter if you force a vote on legislation, even if it was crafted, if you know it's going to die in the Senate and Mitch McConnell's not going to bring it forward.
All right, let's go quickly to Harry before the end. Harry, quickly.
Oh, greetings. Thank you for taking my call. I think there's one issue that about this election, and this one in Georgia is about the abortion issue. One of the candidates, Wolnack, was a minister. But he supports abortion, and this and a lot of the black ministers wrote a letter against him saying that we believe that that life begins at conception, and you're a minister, and you're one of the very few ministers that don't. So what do they? What do the these Christians will ask their parish parishioners, black or white, to vote for him or not? When if the Democrats take over, will they get rid of the Hyde Amendment, which does not allow federal funds for abortion? So the abortion issue is going to be a really big issue on that. Your take on this?
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there because we are out of time. This is something that bears further investigation, though. I'm really sorry we don't have time to get to it today. Thank you for the call, Harry. Thank you, everyone who called today. Tracy, thank you for...